and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, all the way from the frozen north, although probably not very frozen right now, is Chris Dancox. Hello, Chris.
Hey, great to be, nice to be here. And I'm glad to say it is not so frozen right now. In fact, it is quite warm in my home at the moment. So trying to find the solution to the other side of that problem and cool off a little bit. As you imagine, living in the frozen tundra, I don't have AC, so it's I just got to deal with the heat.
Yeah, we it's been unseasonably warm in Idaho. It's been getting up in the 90s in June, which I'm not much of a fan of.
Fair enough. I mean, I shouldn't complain about it too much. It snowed here like 3 weeks ago, so you know, just gotta take it when I can get it. Enjoy the warm weather while it's here.
So, Chris, can we start off with you introducing yourself a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem. So, as you said, my name's Chris Dancox. I've been playing War Machine for, gosh, it's got to be almost a decade now. I got into the game, I can remember, in Mark II, like right around when Warders came out for Trollkin. So that was, you know, a weird time to jump into a brand new faction. And I actually found the game when I was moving cities and met a new gaming group in Kelowna, where, for those of you who may not remember, Jeff Everett lived. So I cut my teeth playing him for a while. And yeah, just been playing the game ever since, slowly getting more and more competitive. I love to go to cons. You know, obviously we can't go to them at this moment, but hopefully things are opening up again somewhat soon. Sooner for your American listeners than my Canadian counterparts. But yeah, really excited for those to open back up so I can get back to playing games and seeing the people that I really enjoy in this community.
So what factions have you tended to focus on?
So I started way back when with trolls. Played the Trollblood faction for a while and was a purist for a decent amount of time. Since then, I've broken away. I've played some Grimkin. I'd say they're probably my second most played faction at this point, quickly becoming my first most played faction as the years catch up. And then I've been playing a bit of Mercs. I've sprinkled around in Kador and some other things, but I'd say that those three factions are kind of my my top ones at the moment.
And so I am curious, what is the experience with the pandemic in your area right now, and how's your local meta doing?
Well, I mean, like most local metas, I would say we took a hit out of the gate with COVID-19, obviously. You know, it's obviously impossible to get in-person games going. And here we were in, like many places, in full lockdown quite quickly. So, you know, that was a bit unfortunate in terms of getting games in, but, you know, it's all better to be safe. Since then, obviously, War Table has sprung up, and we've had a decent amount of local support for playing online. Not as big as, you know, our in-person crowd normally is, but I think that's the case in most places. But now that things are starting to open back up again, we are looking forward to getting games in person. You know, we've seen a mixed bag of results from folks who either really enjoyed War Table and are now just ready and excited to be back into in-person gaming again. And then we've seen the other reaction from folks who really haven't played a whole lot of games at all and are kind of coming out of the woodwork to get back into in-person gaming again. So really excited to see what the meta looks like when that does return in the coming weeks here, and to see, you know, what people have been messing around with while they've been cooped up in their homes.
All right. Well, I guess a bit of info before we dive in on things. Check out the Discount Games Inc. tournament page. It's back up. And if you know of any events that are going on that you have results for, then email me those and I can get them posted. And stay tuned for next week. I'm going to be doing a interview of Hungerford and giving him a chance to talk about his time at Privateer Press and some of his memories about it, etc. And so stay tuned to that. I think it's going to be an enjoyable podcast.
Sounds like an exciting one. I'll definitely be giving that a listen.
Yeah, yeah. So, as always, a reminder, this first episode will be around 45-50 minutes, and then we'll have a bonus episode that's around the same size that will be for people that are doing the support of the Patreon. One exciting bit of news: we have had the two tiers on the Patreon. The higher tier, one of the main benefits was a monthly mini episode with Mr. Hungerford. And the exciting news with that is that he's agreed to continue doing that with me. It's obviously not going to be War Machine centered on that episode, but it is. I think there's a lot of people who want to, you know, keep up with him and hear what's going on in his life. And then I'm also trying to get set up to do another mini episode with a Privateer Press developer each month as well. So we'll see how that goes. Fingers crossed, but I do have the things lined out to do that with Hungerford. So let's go ahead and dive in on the questions from the patrons. And first one is from Newman. He says, how do you feel Grimm can fare in the current meta?
Ooh. I think that they're in a pretty solid position, Grimkin, particularly with obviously the release of the Defiled Archon. You know, for a while they were kind of outclassed in terms of threat ranges and the ability to take a punch and then reach back out and pick pieces up. But the Defiled Archon has really helped with that in a lot of ways, particularly with the ability to reach out and pick up key pieces without maybe having to sacrifice too much. So I think overall they're in a good state. I wouldn't say they're the top faction by any means, but they can certainly roll with any of them at this point. I wouldn't consider them out of any games, and in fact, I'd probably consider them a bit more powerful than many of the other factions out there at this time. So, yeah, overall, good spot.
I mean, I guess I'm curious on your opinion on something. So it feels like this has been, you know, a year or two, a couple years probably. Back in this time, but there was a period of time where Grimkin was viewed as kind of the top dog of the meta. And then as the meta cycle kind of continued, they fell down a little bit in people's estimation, I think. And then I think that they, a lot of people who had been playing Grimkin kind of took a pause with them. And it seems like now they would be in kind of a position where previously they were a faction that had been a lot of people would be doing considerations on how to deal with Grimkin lists, etc. That's likely not so much the case anymore, and that you could even potentially have a little bit of Dark Horse element playing Grimkin at this point. I mean, do you think that that's accurate, or am I off base with that?
Well, I think that the particular solves, I guess, that you used to see for Grimkin are probably not as prevalent in the meta. You know, to your point, that you used to have, you know, a Grimkin answer, right? Like, what are you going to play if you see Dreamer or Heretic on the other side of the board? You know, I don't think that's so required anymore. I think part of the problem, per se, and I mean, I put that in quotations, was Grimkin had a major spike, obviously, in power level when the Clockatrice came out. you know, it was obviously a bit overtuned, and, you know, I, for one, definitely took advantage of that. And then it was subsequently, you know, tuned down. And I think a lot of people thought, or may have considered the tune down to make the Clockatrice, not as good, obviously, which is the case, but maybe so far not as good that it would no longer be relevant or, you know, be, make your list quite good. And I think that that's an incorrect way to look at it. And I think it's kind of was weird timing in terms of people were still a little bit, upset about the power level decrease of Clockatrice at Grimkin in general. When, I mean, the last major con I went to where I was still playing Grimkin was LVO 2020, at this point. Gosh, so no, I guess it would be 2019 at this point almost. But anyways, no, 2020 was correct. Sorry. But all of that to say, you didn't see a lot of Grimkin there. I still did quite well with Grimkin, including a list with six Clockatrice. And, you know, I think they're certainly not as powerful as they were upon release, but they're still very good. And if you use them effectively and position efficiently with them, you can still very much take advantage of, you know, the time strutter. You can still very much take advantage of the slow spray instead of paralyzed. Yes, these are all downgrades, but I don't think people were able to fully step into where the Grimkin power level was post Clockatrice nerf, and that's affected people's overall perception of how strong the Grimkin faction is, and thus, you know, how prevalent they are in the meta at the moment. So
I would be kind of, it'd be kind of curious to see if, let's say tomorrow there was an in-person event, and if you went to that event with Grimkin, it seems to me like Grimkin has for a long time kind of been this faction that it benefits if the more practice you have against Grimkin, and if you haven't gotten many reps in against them, then it can be kind of a sad, difficult time for you. And yeah. So I'm kind of curious in this hypothetical event, you know, how many players there would be in it who, you know, they just don't have anyone playing Grimkin locally. They're not getting the games versus it, and that it would be kind of a surprise experience for them.
Yeah, certainly. I think that there's a lot of things, even outside of the Arcana, which are obviously a very kind of gotcha element of the whole faction. There's a lot of things that are just kind of weird in the faction in general, in terms of what models can do and the effects that they can kind of put on your army. So it could end up being a very one-sided experience very quickly if you don't have that experience, or at least that cursory knowledge of what the Grimkin player is trying to accomplish in a game. And I mean, that's the case for most War Machine factions. Knowledge is a huge part of this game, but it's just more so with Grimkin in a lot of ways. There's a lot more gotchas, I think, in the army in general. So definitely would be something, you know, as you creep up, say, the standings, you know, of a, you know, where you think that knowledge level is going to be in the tournament, you're going to have more difficult games as you get to the top of that, obviously, not just because of skill level, but also because they're going to have a stronger knowledge against you. And the lower you get, the more ability you're going to be able to utilize that to your advantage and get a, you know, to your point, a gotcha moment, which sometimes, you know, obviously doesn't feel great for either side, but it's still a part of the faction in general.
Well, it can also, especially if it's, say, a 5 or even maybe 6 round event, if you have one round where early on where the game goes fairly quickly, that's something that can help your stamina some with the day, etc. So I am kind of curious, when you play Grimkin, there was a lot of times when I was playing Grimkin previously that I was playing kind of a longer game a lot of times, to where either my opponent is tabled or we're getting to like the bottom of turn 7. Is that frequently still the type of play experience that you're having with Grimkin?
Yeah, I think it's list dependent, obviously, like most things. So I'll give you a nice solid, you know, it depends on that that answer. But if you're playing something similar to, you know, the Dreamer 2x3 heavies list that was popular for a long time, yeah, you're going to end up, you got a smaller footprint, a smaller model count with models that are going to have to do work over a longer period of time. So yeah, you're definitely going to end up with a longer game in that respect. So if you're playing that kind of list, absolutely, you're looking at a turn 6, turn 7 finish probably, you know, in most of your games. Now, you can build lists that are going to be significantly more aggressive, significantly higher model counts, that you're going to be able to, you know, sacrifice more and take up more space and maybe secure a early scenario win because you've just done so much damage early. I find that's often the case much more with my old witch list with the several clocks. You know, it has a large footprint on the table. It covers basically board edge to board edge, and it's aggressive and it sets the pace early. So you can, with a list like that, I find I'm generally ending games closer to turn 5, you know, turn 6 at the latest. It's very rare that those games go all the way to 7.
All right, so the next question from Newman with a follow-up from Zach Witten says, have you gotten to play any games with the Slaughterhouse, and if so, how did it perform? And then Zach says, doubling down on this question, tell me how to not be bad with the house.
Well, I'll start off with saying, unfortunately, I haven't played any actual games with the Slaughterhouse yet, partly because I just haven't been playing a lot of Grimkin recently since the VTC ended. I've been playing a bit more Mercs, but also partly because I'm just super not enthused with how that model came out. You know, we're not always looking for something to be at the very tip top of the power curve, but the Slaughterhouse is most certainly, in my opinion, not there. Not close enough to being overly relevant in the Grimkin faction. And the only reason I say that is it has some very, very strong heavies to contend with. And in most cases, I would much prefer to bring the, you know, 2.5 heavies versus the 1 Slaughterhouse. Now, I do think that there are opportunities for the Slaughterhouse to be good, but you have to kind of build and plan around it, and, you know, make the sacrifice that you're not going to have the multiple pieces on the board that are going to help you out in that space. So the list I could see where you'd really have success maybe with a Slaughterhouse, something like potentially like the Bump in the Night, a bunch of Dreadrots list with a couple of Grave Ghouls. And, you know, maybe you even go all in with taking an old witch as your caster there, with so you have a couple of the big bases. And what those are going to do for you is, A, the prevalence of models that will give you corpses to your Grave Ghouls will allow your Slaughterhouse to heal over time, which is a big deal, obviously, when you're a gargantuan. And then secondly, the rerolls from the Grave Ghouls plus the rerolls from maybe an old witch actually start to make the gun, the porch light, I think it is, start to become a little bit more relevant on a model of that many points and that size. My biggest concern with the Slaughterhouse in general is just, you know, it doesn't really go super far or super fast. You can speed it up in a couple of ways in Grimkin, but you have the porch light to help you out in that space, but unfortunately the porch light is kind of, you know, only usable if you can get around certain things like shield guards or, you know, even just terrain and high defense. You know, you really have to invest a lot into the one shot it's going to get in order for it to be threatening every single turn, which is kind of what you would expect from a 35 point gargantuan. So that's kind of my take on the Slaughterhouse. Not super positive, unfortunately, but there is a space for it in the world.
So next question from Zach Witten. He says, Cephalics are really cool, but I have no idea where to start. What should I buy for a 50-point/Brawl Machine style friendly list? And what should I expect from their playstyle?
Well, I think, so we're switching gears here to Mercs. I like it. So I think the Cephalics list at 50 points, if you're playing Brawl Machine specifically, obviously you don't have access to Thexus. I believe he's banned. But if you're just looking for the style, like a smaller list style, and you wanted to bring Thexus, then you could look at picking up some, you know, some wardens, like the monstrosities in general. Basically all of them are good with Thexus, or at least good enough that you could play them. You know, so you'd want to pick up his battle group points worth of those. And then you could look at, you know, some of the nice, powerful units that you can pick up with him. So those would be things like Gatsby 4, obviously something you want to have on the list. He's very, very good. A Jack for him, doesn't really matter which one. But, you know, Stalkers are always helpful. If you wanted to throw some Dominators in the list, you like Dominated units, Crows Cutthroats, very good unit to have. Or you could look at, you know, taking Overlords or Void Archons, all of those. The biggest advantage to the Cephalics army at this time is that it has advantage to a lot of like really good pieces that work well with Thexus in particular. Siphon as well, I don't think he's quite as good, but you could look at putting him together with a handful of monstrosities, picking up some of those really good pieces again, putting those in the list, and all of a sudden, you know, at 50 points, that can be pretty strong. So definitely would start with those kinds of pieces. Monstrosities, strong units, maybe some Dominators and some Overlords. Go from there.
So the next question from Zach, he says, can you make a Cephalics pairing or do you need other Mercs?
That's a great question. Personally, I think that you need other Mercs. I like Siphon. I think he can do cool things, but I don't know if he particularly solves anything that Thexus needs him to solve specifically. So I think I would rely on using other Mercs where possible. And the good news is you have lots to choose from there. You know, Aurora 2 is a fantastic pair for Thexus. And sorry, I keep saying Thexus because he's my kind of my prime choice when I look at Cephalics in general. So everything I say, I just compare against the pair of him as the primary, because I think he's a very strong caster, you know, in general and in the current meta. So, but like I said, Aurora 2, very good choice. I played at the VTC last year. I had taken an Ashlyn 1 list with him, and that was particularly to deal with infantry swarms, things like Doom Reavers. So Ashlyn had, you know, a whole bunch of gun mages, and so the plan was, you know, if we saw Vlad 2 as an example, just single shot all those Doom Reavers off the board as quickly as we could with a, I think it's a 20 something odd inch threat range with the gun mages. So lots you can do there. But you know, what you want to find is a good solution to whatever problem gap you're missing in your Thexus list, if that's the way you're building it. I've also found in the current meta, obviously everyone is afraid of Aurora 2. So the bunch of games I've played since putting Aurora 2 in my list is quite funny, because the second I drop Thexus, everyone's like, oh, why didn't you put down Aurora 2? I'm like, well, just because I know that's, she's kind of just there as a boogeyman, and I'm playing in a current tournament where I had lost my first round, so I finally dropped Aurora 2 in the second round, and was just like, I guess we're going to give this a go and see how it actually works out. So it's a bit of a fun experience, but you know, it's a little bit of a trick up your sleeve there as well.
So since this was a question about a pairing, you on the most recent VTC, you took Mercs to that VTC, correct?
No, sorry. The most recent VTC I took Grimkin. The previous VTC I took Mercs.
Okay. If you were to go to a tournament tomorrow and decided to take Mercs, what do you think your most likely pairing would look like?
I think if I was to go to a tournament tomorrow, I think my pairing would look very similar to the one I'm playing online at the moment, and that is, like I was mentioning, probably Aurora 2 and Phexis. Those two paired together ask a couple of very difficult questions, puts your opponent in a particularly difficult spot right off the bat. Those are kind of the casters I would go with. You know, I'd probably look at a general style Aurora 2 list with the Tessellators and the Angels, obviously, just to really drive home that problem for my opponent. And then, the Phexis list, again, built with the super super powerful units and solos you have access to that I was mentioning before, and a handful of monstrosities, or a few monstrosities, I guess.
All right, so Zach's next question. Do you think that Grimkin are always going to be behind on the power curve now that people know how to play against Arcana?
Good question. I'll say I don't know if I agree just with the general concept that they are behind on the power curve. As I mentioned, I think that they're not at the top of the power curve, certainly, but they are right in there with the top factions at this point in time. But that, I think what we're trying to get into is, do we feel that they're still good if you're playing an opponent who knows how to play against Arcana? And I think the answer there is still yes. I think that the Arcana, there's kind of a couple of ways you can look at them. Obviously, if you're playing someone who hasn't played a lot of Grimkin, again, they can be used as a gotcha in the game and, get you out of maybe a tight spot and, change the game drastically in a moment. But even if you're playing someone who knows the faction really well and understands how to work around Arcana, you can still create situations where the opponent has to make a difficult decision to proc an Arcana, and there can be no way around it. Examples of that include things like Ill Omens, right? If I put a warrior model in between you and my heavy, and you have to get to that heavy, otherwise the heavy's going to do something specific, something nasty next turn. Well, you have to kill that warrior model. And if you don't have RFP in the area, that could also be like a sacrifice target. Or there's lots of options available to you to force the opponent to make a bad decision or make a tough decision that will allow you to use Arcana. So regardless of the knowledge level, I'd say Arcana are still very good. You just sometimes have to be smarter as the Grimkin player to pick and utilize her at once. I've had lots of games where Arcana has still been against top level players, where Arcana has still been a deciding factor in the game, still been very relevant. I've also had lots of games where they haven't been. So don't take my word that 100% of the time it's going to work. But it still comes up in high level games where you can utilize it to your advantage.
I do think that it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of curious if Privateer Press were to rewind the clocks, if they would even choose to go with the Arcana system at this point, or just do feats. I think that as a player of Grimkin, I would probably prefer a feat. And I think that one of the things that the game's starting to struggle with is just like a bloat of rules, a bloat of models, etc. And having many factions that have their own little set of rules starts adding to that. But I don't know. I'm curious what your opinion is. Do you think that you would prefer to have, if you were to make the choice on whether Grimkin would have feats or Arcana, which one do you think you would pick?
I think I would still vote Arcana as the way to go. Again, I think it's a fun flavor to add, and I know that that's part of the problem, but it's also kind of part of what makes the sub factions cool, right, and exciting to play. So personally, I love the puzzle of trying to figure out what Arcanas are going to work best in different situations. I know obviously, you have the main ones that you go back to quite often. You're always gonna, you know, pick those really strong ones where you don't maybe see the benefit of some of the less used ones. But there's some cases where, you know, a 4-inch piece of terrain has just straight up won me a game, you know. Yeah. So there's lots of cool intricacies that you can find within the Arcana. You just unfortunately need to play a lot of games to understand what they look like or what you can really utilize with all of them.
So next question from Zach, he says, what is the most fun I can have in Grimkin if I don't want to play any clocks?
Well, we talked about the slaughterhouse earlier. Oh, sorry.
Quick side note. I'll just say, Zach, it's okay to play with two clocks. They're a lot of fun. But if you want to play zero, that's okay too. And so with that being the case, what would you say, Chris?
Like I said, we talked about the house earlier, the slaughterhouse. I think there's a lot of fun you can have with that model. Like I said, I don't think it's at the top of the power curve, certainly, but it's a interesting model to try and play around with. And if you're just looking for something exciting to fill your battle group points, that could be the solution. I think you can have a lot of fun playing a more infantry centric list with Grimkin, you know, lots of Dreadrots and Isaiah. You know, I think there's some fun lists you can play with there that I've seen around. You know, so if you're not playing with clocks, the other option too is to just go with your other heavies and play, you know, more of a, you would basically have to play in Dark Menagerie then, because you'd want corpses off the bat with the other heavies. But you know, Skinemones are still good. Cage Ragers, still very good. They don't maybe have the utility of the clock, but they're still very good pieces on the board, so you can throw those down and I'm sure you'll still have a great time. And I believe there was a list you know, a few years back that I saw, it was like 13 Gorehounds or something with Wanderer. So if you're really looking to just have a weird and crazy battle group, that could be a fun one to try out if you get your hands on that many Gorehounds.
I do like the Gorehound quite a bit. All right, so next question. This is also from Zach. Final question from him in this set. He says, you fall into a black hole and warfare weaken is suddenly tomorrow. What is your pair?
Well, I think if I've fallen into a black hole and suddenly emerged without practice, I probably fall back on Grimkin, namely just because I can play most of those armies quite easily. Cephalix and Mercs in general are just, you know, a little bit more difficult, I think, in my mind. They're not quite as straightforward. So I probably fall back on my experience with probably an old witch and a dreamer, having played them for a few years now. And, you know, utilize the new pieces as best as I can and go from there. Also, you know, if I'm going to Warfare Weekend from a hobby perspective, my Grimkin army is done. My if I've fallen into a black hole, I'm going to assume I haven't finished my Mercs at this point, which have basically sat on the shelf since COVID began. So, yeah, I think that would be where I'd go. You know, I don't want to show up to Warfare Weekend with an unpainted army. So need to represent.
So can you go in a little bit deeper on what the lists and pairing that you played at this most recent VTC were and how you felt like they performed?
Sure, absolutely. I don't want to get this wrong, so I'm just going to pull them up quickly here. I can make sure that I talk to them correctly. So at the VTC, I played a pair of Dreamer and Old Witch. My Old Witch list had 5 Clockatrice, a couple Grave Ghouls, Baron, some Trapperkin, you know, solos to taste, Madcaps, and a couple Defiled Archons. You know, powerful list there, very fast, very mobile. Like I said, has a big footprint on the board. The pair to that, that was in a Bump in the Night. And then I paired that with Dreamer, which I started with the build of the 2x3 heavies and just incorporated Defiled Archons by removing a Cage Rager and then playing with the solo loadout a little bit. So I have a Cage Rager, 2 Clockatrice, 2 Skinemones, a pair of Kravitz as a rec choice, Baron not as a rec choice, four Gremlin Swarms, the Death Knell, and then the two Defiled Archons. So that list is obviously, you know, much more centralized around the Death Knell. Doesn't necessarily reach out as far, but it has a lot of attrition value, a lot of staying power in the games, and is quite good in certain matchups. So that was the list construction of the pair that I took to VTC. The way it worked at VTC, all cards on the table here, unfortunately, was that Dreamer did not end up getting played, and in most cases, Old Witch was the better option in the current meta. So something to consider. I may switch out that Dreamer list in the future here, but I've played in a few other tournaments where Dreamer has been the list that's gone as the primary, you know, four or five rounds. So it's a bit weird, but that's just kind of how it worked out at VTC.
All right. So next question, set of questions are from Zap Brannigan. He says, what about Cephalix do you enjoy most from a playstyle perspective?
So again, when I think Cephalix, I think namely Thexus. And what I enjoy the most about playing him in particular is the optionality in the list. Again, you have access to some very powerful units and solos that you can put into very good positions on the board, and then you can use Thexus to make those solos even more advantageous, you know, because they can reach out and pick up a piece. Very similar to, you know, some of the reasons people really like Kruger too. You know, with TK. TK in general is just a really good spell, and provides you a whole lot of optionality that you can utilize. So what I find with Thexus in the same space is you can pick up pieces or, you know, threaten pieces and not have to necessarily give up much to accomplish it if you're making the correct choices or the most ideal choices at the time. So sometimes that doesn't work out and everything you have dies and you're very sad about it. But a well-played Thexus game is just this weird, intricate puzzle that you just have to kind of figure out. And from my perspective, that playstyle is very, very interesting and rewarding. So that's what I really like about the faction in general.
All right. So next question from Zap. He says, why should I pick Cephalix up over other Merc choices?
Well, I mean, they're so cool looking. The monstrosities, the characters, even the units, you know, not you can take Gatsby for and, you know, lots of other themes, or Void Archons and lots of other themes. But the units, like the Dominator guys in the units, or the Overlords, or the Drudges. Like, I think there's just a really cool aesthetic there that one can really appreciate in Cephalix. You know, to the point, there's a little bit of dark horse factor there. So, you know, your opponents may not necessarily know exactly what you're planning to do when you drop them over a different, more meta-centric choice in Mercs. And also, you know, I think that they pair really nicely with other Merc choices, like I was saying. So if you are building an Aurora list, or, you know, an Ashlyn list, or something like, along, you know, even Nosorum, you know, Cordy, you know, Doyle ran a bunch of Nosorum and Thexus for a while because they just pair nicely together. So, you know, you kind of have a control caster along with a hard question type caster in either Aurora 2 or Nosorum or whatever choice you go with. So that's why I would pick them up to add and make an even stronger pairing between your two choices in Mercs.
So next question from Zap. He says, what are your favorite units to attach to a Dominator? And so I think there's probably a fair number of listeners who haven't played against or looked at War Room for a while with Cephalix. So first off, can you describe what the Dominator is, what it does, and then say what you like to attach it to?
Absolutely, no problem. So the weird part about Cephalix is, you know, obviously, you know, lore-wise, they're mind control-y type guys. You know, so the Dominator is effectively an attachment for a Merc unit that you have access to, and you know, this you can look through the swath of Merc units available to the faction, and he you know, like a lot of other command attachments for mercenary options, he'll make them part of your Cephalix faction, basically. He also gives them tough, which is kind of cool. And there's like a weird kind of thematic rule where if the Dominator dies, the unit kind of freaks out and has to run the next turn. So there's like a weird thematic and fun kind of rule set there. But all of that to say, it is, you know, just a 1 point guy that you attach to a Merc unit of choice, and he allows it to be in the Cephalix faction with you. The units I like best to utilize in that space, you can use Crow's Cutthroats, again, particularly when you pair it with a Cephalix and with the not so recent but somewhat relevant Crow's update where they got Prey. I think that was, you know, almost a year and a half or so, more, even maybe even more so ago now. You know, they're a cool unit with backstab, you know, and TK. You can pick up units at range. Now I'll say you can do the same thing with Lucas and CG, and with access to the debuffs in that faction, I'm a little bit scared of that. But in Cephalix, it looks really cool. Additionally, I like Ayana and Holt. You don't see them in a whole lot of other lists, but you know, for I think they're what, 8 points, and then you attach the one point Dominator to them. They become a little nice package of, you know, Holt is obviously, he's got two really good guns, or, you know, decently good. So he can help out. And then you have Harm for Ayana for a little bit of damage output increase for your units. And, you know, when you have TK in there as well, you can increase the threat range of that Harm and the ability to deliver it safely and keep Ayana, you know, away from danger. So I think those are probably my two favorite units, but you know, you, if someone loads up War Room right now, you can see there's a whole ton of options you can add to a Dominator. And there's probably some interesting and cool connections in lots of other ones that you I'm missing here.
Okay. So final question of this episode, Zap Brannigan asks, how often do you use the ambush from the theme benefit?
Well, unfortunately, one of the things I've not mentioned a whole lot of is Drudges at this point. Mostly because I think, unfortunately, Drudges are a bit outclassed by other infantry at this point, and they need their stats are not particularly great in keeping them around. So I have to say I do not use ambush at all because I don't take Drudges.
All right, well, we can wrap up this first episode here. As always, check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming purchases. And check out Muse on Minis. I know that one thing that Nigel has recently developed that he's really excited about has been a new style of token system that to use with Warcaster Neo Mechanica. So if you are been interested in that game, we have some new token sets for that you can check out. So, Chris, I wanted to thank you very much for sharing your time and knowledge with us. We definitely appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always a good time.
And yeah, and thank you everyone who's been supporting the Patreon. You guys are awesome.